If you're snacking on anything but tasty cake, you're making a huge Miss Cake. A fistful of chocolate-covered raisins? Miss Cake. A spoonful of peanut butter? Bigger Miss Cake. Or the worst Miss Cake of all, your kid's Halloween candy, and it's April. If it's not tasty cake, it's a Miss Cake. Because nothing satisfies like a perfectly sweet butterscotch crimpet or rich and creamy chocolate peanut butter candy cake. Tasty cake. Accept no substitutes.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the Senior Director of Charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital, Katie Atkinson. Hi, Katie.
Hey, Keith.
How's it going?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
I am swell. How was your weekend?
You know, it was a good SoCal weekend. Very sunny.
It's also Father's Day.
It was.
Father's Day with baby Cal.
Took the new dad out to a little Korean barbecue, as you do on Father's Day.
Sure. And I'm sure baby Cal enjoyed the Korean barbecue.
Yes, indeed.
Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop and Korean barbecue on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we've got news about Beyoncé and Jay-Z's surprise new album, Dave Matthews Band's new number one album, and the unexpected death of rising rapper XXXTentacion.
Plus, we have got an interview with the breakthrough singer-songwriter Ella May. She stopped in to talk about her somewhat unlikely discovery, thanks to Instagram, her debut chart hit Boot Up, and how she freaked out when she heard Beyoncé name-checked her single. So, stick around for that a little bit later. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss a single episode. Or, of course, you can always subscribe to us on your favorite podcast provider that is not iTunes. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
So let's hit some of the biggest headlines over on Billboard.com. And right now, there is nothing bigger than the death of rapper XXXTentacion. It is Monday while we're taping, and we found out earlier today that the rapper was involved in a shooting in South Florida. And then it took a few hours to have the news trickle out that, in fact, he was fatally shot on the scene. He just earned his first number one album on the Billboard 200 back in March. The 20-year-old, whose real name is Jesse Amfroy, skyrocketed rap stardom through his songs posted on SoundCloud before legal trouble started earning him headlines that had nothing to do with music. He was awaiting trial on more than a dozen felony charges and on allegations of domestic violence against his then-pregnant girlfriend.
Well, before his death, he had amassed 16 hits on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, including the top 10 single Sad, as well as a pair of top 10 albums on the Billboard 200. His most recent release, Question Mark, debuted at number one earlier this year, giving him his first chart topper on the list. In total, he had collected nearly 4 billion on-demand streams for his catalog of songs before he died in the U.S., according to Nielsen Music.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked to him about him in the context of charts on this program before because he had such a huge album back in March. And yeah. He was one of those guys who, if you were a hip-hop head, you knew about him years ago. And then maybe last year you started hearing about him for all the wrong reasons.
Right.
And then obviously the music came back to the, be the center point again with his album in March. Obviously, controversy followed his entire career. But, you know, hip hop is reacting on Twitter right now, and people are definitely focusing on the music and mourning the loss of the artist.
Right.
So let's shift to a little happier news.
Yeah, let's.
The weekend, prior to this news, the weekend was dominated by Beyoncé and Jay-Z surprise releasing a joint album as The Carters called Everything is Love. Beyoncé and Jay-Z love the element of surprise, and they kept a huge secret once again, releasing this album of 9 songs on Saturday. The album initially dropped on Tidal and became available on all streaming platforms and on digital retail as well as of Monday. So, Keith, what do we know? I know it's early. What do we know about where this might end up on the Billboard 200 come next week?
Oh, based on their individual track records, you know, Beyonce has 6 previous number ones on the Billboard 200, and Jay-Z has 14, the most among solo artists. It's safe to say the album has a pretty good chance of hitting number one.
Yeah.
But that said, we don't know how the marketplace is going to react to the news of XXXTentacion's passing. Generally speaking, when an artist dies suddenly, there is usually some chart reaction. So we shall see how that is reflected on our charts next week. Basically just stay tuned to Billboard.com, and we'll have forecast stories and such up probably by the time you hear this show.
Indeed. And another thing we'll be watching on the charts is the song specifically from the new Beyonce and Jay-Z album called Ape Shit, which got its own kind of film visual over the weekend. And they actually taped, that's so like, they didn't tape it.
Videotaped.
Yeah, they videotaped it. They filmed it in the Louvre Museum in Paris. They unleashed that video at the same time on Saturday. And the song features writing credits. Man, mm-hmm. I cannot talk.
Yeah.
By Offset, Pharrell, and Quavo, with Pharrell assisting on production and Offset and Quavo of Migos, of course, as additional vocalists, which you can immediately hear. It sounds like Beyonce and Jay-Z on a Migos song, like, instantly.
Yeah.
Filmed in a deserted Louvre among backdrops like the Mona Lisa. It stars the duo and a group of synchronized dancers and just backed up by, you know, world-class art. Anyone who's been to the Louvre before, like, you know, you wander around and you're just stunned by everything you see. And now it's like the backdrop of this like luxurious, you know, music video.
Also, it's weird to see the Louvre without anyone in it.
It is bizarre, yeah. Especially like the Mona Lisa specifically, which yeah. is typically just an absolute, you know, cattle call.
Madhouse. Well, when you're Jay-Z and Beyonce,
you can make things anything happen. Is possible.
Yeah.
There was also a little news broken, sort of. Not really news, but, like, Jay-Z kind of vented his frustrations about a few things in the song Ape Shit. In his lyrics, he said, "I said no to the Super Bowl. You need me. I don't need you. Every night we in the end zone. Tell the NFL we in stadiums, too." And then later on in his verse, he calls out the Grammys for his latest album, 444, winning no awards this year, despite being a leading nominee. "Tell the Grammys to fuck that 0-for-8 shit. Have you ever seen the crowd going ape shit?" So thank you, Jay-Z and Beyonce, for making me say all those words on the podcast.
That's our shitty moment with Katie. Well, in some non-Jay-Z and Beyonce chart news, let's talk about some of the charts. First up, Dave Matthews Band's Come Tomorrow album bows at number one on the Billboard 200 chart, giving the act its 7th number one. And get this, Come Tomorrow is Dave Matthews Band's. That's really weird to say.
That's hard to say.
There's a lot of possessives and plurals in there. Dave Matthews Band's. Okay. Come Tomorrow is Dave Matthews Band's 7th straight studio album to debut at number one, making them the only group to see 7 consecutive studio albums bow at number one. And believe it or not, their hot streak dates back to 1998, when Before These Crowded Streets debuted at number one, and every studio album since then has started at number one. Now, of course, in amongst all those studio albums are a bunch of live albums and a hits compilation, which did not hit number one. But if we're just looking at studio albums, mm-hmm. every single one of them from 1998 forward has debuted at number one. Over on the Billboard Hot 100, Drake's Nice For What bumps back to number one after Post Malone's Psycho got a week atop the chart last week. Farther down the chart, in the names you didn't expect to see on the Hot 100 category, Kids See Ghosts, which is the duo of Kanye West and Kid Cudi, brings the long-dead Louis Prima back to the Hot 100 as Fourth Dimension, featuring Prima, debuts at number 42. It's the first appearance by Prima on the list since 1961, when Wonderland by Night hit number 15. On Fourth Dimension, Prima, who passed away in 1978, has his vocals sampled from the 1936 song What Will Santa Claus Say? meanwhile, a week ago, George Benson, who is very much alive, was back on the chart for the first time in more than 30 years, as his featured turn on Gorillaz' Humility debuted at number 85. This week, it falls off the Hot 100, but it debuts over on the Alternative Songs Airplay chart at number 40. And on Humility, it's not a sample. It's actually Benson playing guitar, and he is singing background vocals.
Yeah. Dan was very excited about this. He loves George Benson.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Well, now it is time for our interview with Ella May. The rising singer-songwriter recently hit the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 with her debut chart hit, Booed Up. And the track has already topped the Hot R&B Songs chart. She stopped by the office to chat about how the producer Mustard discovered her on Instagram from her doing 15-second covers of songs, and how that ultimately led her to coming to Los Angeles and recording 3 EPs worth of music so far. There could be more, we don't know, including the hit Booed Up. She also talks about some of her inspirations and how she got super excited recently by Beyoncé name-checking Booed Up in concert. So, listen to our chat with Ella May. Welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop, Ella May.
Oh, thank you for having me.
How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good. Have you had a moment to sort of breathe recently? Because you're a little bit busy.
No, I've had a couple moments, so I'm good. Yeah.
Well, you know, Booed Up has been racing up the Billboard charts lately.
Yes.
It's already number one on our Hot R&B Songs chart. It's top 10 on the All Genre Billboard Hot 100.
Insanity.
Which is super. Like, it went top 10 like super fast.
Yeah.
Which is actually, and I work in charts at Billboard, it's super unusual for just like a straight up R&B track to go that high so quickly.
Yeah.
Usually you need like a guest rapper or like...
Or a slower build.
Or a slower build.
Yeah.
But it's like really blown up. What's it been like, you know, to see the success of the song happen on the charts and, you know, for you personally?
Yeah, it's been, like I said, it's been pretty insane to just like... Even to just sit down and think about it, like, let alone go on Twitter or go on Instagram and see, like, all these different people listening to it and making videos to it and saying how much they love it. But just, like, just actually thinking, like you said, R&B has been in such a weird place, I feel like, for a couple years, maybe even more than a couple years. So to have, a soul R&B song with, like you said, with no feature, like, we were told that in order to get to number one, you need to have a rapper on it, because that means Urban will play it and hit the hip-hop radio stations will play it.
Generally, you do.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's a reason why people say that.
Yeah. And to be honest, when I was told that, I was like, yeah, well, that's the norm.
Okay.
So I was in that same boat, but like, we just went number one at Urban Radio the other day as well with no feature. So it's been like all of the different things that are happening with the one song. It's just been really crazy, but like, amazing at the same time. So it's been like, I always say, this is the stuff that you dream about. Like, I've dreamed about like having the number one and being on the bill, even to be on the Billboard top 100. Like, when we debuted, I was like, wow, this is something. So to now be in the top 10 with no, like, you know, no big feature, like we said, and Mustard's tag is not even on the song, so it's like, it's just solely like me.
It's been
amazing.
And the song is like, I want to say it's like more than a year old, right? It came out like a year ago?
It came out February 2017, so over a year, yeah.
Are you just like, see people? Like, what took you so long? Because, I mean, that's sometimes it happens with a new artist, or, you know, I mean, new to us on the charts. You know, that breakthrough single sometimes takes a minute to catch on.
Yeah.
And we were interviewing Lauv recently, and his song has been out for like more than a year. He's just like, I haven't tired of it, and I love the people that are just discovering it for the first time.
Yeah.
Is it exciting to you still now to see a song that you think might be a little bit old to reach people that maybe had never heard of you until like the past
100%. Yeah. Like, I don't think, I always say as well, I don't think the timing of it matters. Like, even if the song came out yesterday or if the song came out 5 years ago, the fact that it's doing what it's doing, it feels the same. Do you know what I mean? Like, even though it's been out for over a year, I still love it as much as I did when it came out. And now to have other people appreciate it as much as I do just makes it that much better. So I kind of like, I'm happy that it's had this kind of like rebirth, sorry, because when I first put it out, like, the people who already knew about me and were listening to my EPs and stuff before then obviously heard the song. And I was on tour at the time, and it wasn't even in my set. And mm-hmm. People kept coming up to me and being like, why is Boot Up not in your set? Why is Boot Up not in your set? But because I had just put it out, I thought maybe it was too new to perform. So as the tour went on, I was like, okay, I kind of have to put it in my set, because everyone was literally like, why is Boot Up not in your set? Like, it was a request. So I put it in my set, and that was the song that I would come out to. And slowly, as time went on, I could feel it building, like, more and more people each time. And then I came off tour, and it was still just kind of like living. And then all of a sudden, this whole like thing of it just kind of like the whole rebirth and radio playing it and stuff like that. So even though it's over a year old, it doesn't feel like, oh my God, why are you guys singing this? Like, it's too old. Like, it's still as exciting as it was if I put it out a month ago. So yeah.
Amazing.
And it's such fun wordplay with like the way it's a little heartbeat with Boot Up. Like, how did that come about? Who came up with that? And was it like an aha moment when it happened?
Yeah, it's funny because the way, like, the heartbeat, Bidi Dadu, Boot Up, it's kind of like, it's not, obviously, Bidi Dadu is not, I had someone tweet me, like, if that's really how your heart sounds, then you have an issue.
Like, you have, like,
you
no
need to go to, the hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, it was just like, yeah, it was a clever, we wanted to make the song really fun, which I think we succeeded in.
Yeah.
And we wanted to make it just like an innocent puppy love. It's clean, there's no like cursing in it or anything, so every age can kind of appreciate that. But yeah, it was just, it kind of was like aha moment, and yeah, it was just like, we just wanted to have fun. And I was actually named after Ella Fitzgerald, who's obviously one of the biggest jazz singers. So the Bidi Dadu is also, it can also be considered scatting as well. So
So I'm wondering, what came first, the title of the song, or did you first like write the lyrics and think, oh,
that kind of sounds
that
like
sound
up
that we just made there sounds like booed up.
Yeah,
like, what came first?
I never really pick a title before I write a song. I think that kind of boxes you in to like, okay, I have to hit these words on the head type of thing. So I normally go with like melodies first, and then I'll normally have a concept, but I won't necessarily have a title. So yeah, we did the melodies and the concept of it first, but not I didn't write like, okay, this song's gonna be called Boot Up and we're gonna figure it out however we did. No,
it just works on so many levels, because like, you know, when you listen to it repeatedly, I'm like, someone could think this is like booted up, like I'm booting up a computer, but not really.
Or you could think it's gibberish and just
Well, Mustard, of course, I mean, a lot of people know this story. Mustard found you on Instagram.
Yes.
When you were doing your 15-second cover snippets.
Was it
literally him like sliding into your DMs and being like, hey, you're amazing, and you're like, is this really DJ Mustard?
that was exactly it. I was just on Instagram one day and he sent me a DM and was kind of just like, what's your situation? And I definitely had to like go on his page and make sure that he had the verified tick, because I was like, this could be anyone.
This could be totally weird.
Right. Yeah. It was definitely him. And at that point, because I was solely doing Instagram videos, like they were put on YouTube by, I think, other people, but I was actually only uploading to Instagram.
I saw you got smart though. Halfway through those Instagrams, you started putting your tag like, across it, so in case someone took it and put it on YouTube, people would know where to go to find it.
Anyway,
sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So I would have all these random people in my direct messages saying like, "Oh, I want to work with you," and blah blah. And a lot of it I didn't know. Like, I didn't know who was who.
Right.
So when DJ Mustard came into my DMs, and I went on his page, and he had the verified tick, and I was like, "Okay, this is actually him."
Right.
I had to like take a minute to be like, "Wow, okay, this is happening."
Yeah.
But yeah, he was just asking me what my situation was, and at the time, I really didn't have a situation. I was literally just singing in my bedroom. I worked in retail. I went to school for music, but I didn't have like any management or anything like that.
Where did you work at retail? Were you in London?
Yeah, I worked in Aveda, which is like a hair and skin hair and skincare company. Yeah. So that was my part-time job on the weekends, and I went to school during the week. So I literally said that to him. I was like, I don't have a situation, because I didn't know what to say. I didn't want it to be like, okay, well, if I say I have no situation, he's going to be like, okay, forget it then. Like, that's too much work.
Right.
But I didn't also want to be like, yeah, hit my manager, and it would have been me typing the email. So
change your voice
on behalf of Ella.
So I kind of was just like, oh, I don't really have a situation right now. Just, you know, like, I just love to sing kind of thing. And he took it well, luckily. and he was just saying to me, like, he was interested in working with me. And that was it. It was quite a, like a short conversation. He just wanted to know where I was in the world. Because when I sing, you can't really hear that I'm English. My accent kind of disappears.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until I was listening to your EP. And then there was the interlude. So I'm like, oh, my goodness, she's not American.
Yeah. So he was just trying to find out a little bit more about me. And then the conversation kind of stopped. And then maybe a month later after that conversation, I was in New York. And he was in Philadelphia for Made in America Festival. And he saw that I was in New York. I think I must have posted something with the location. And he was like, oh, I'm in Philly. I'm gonna drive to New York. Are you free on Friday to do a studio session? And I was just like, even if I wasn't, I will be there. Yeah. Like, that's not an opportunity that you miss. And like I said, I didn't have management. So I took two of my friends with me and just kind of like went on a whim. Didn't know what to expect. It was like super... I wouldn't say I was nervous, but I say apprehensive because, I was just like, didn't know how he would be. He could have been super rude. He could have been like, you know. So, but I got there and he was super chilled. He was like, I didn't feel pressured at all. He kind of just played me a whole bunch of beats from a folder that he had and he was just like, pick whatever you want. And kind of just, I think he just wanted to see my process and wanted to see how I worked. So he just let me be and was just like watching what I was doing, but not like over my shoulder.
Wow.
And we made three songs that night. And from there, he was just like, oh, I want to get you out to LA. And I'd never been to LA. So I was like, okay. Like, I still didn't have management. Like, it was all such a new experience to me that I was like, when I first came, I brought my brother. Because I have an older brother, so my mom was like, take your brother. So
it's like, take someone with you. Yeah. So you're not just like roaming around by yourself with this random DJ mustard.
So we came in the end of 2015 and the beginning of 2016. I was back and forth from London to here, just recording. Like the first time I came to LA, I didn't see any of LA. I was just in the studio all week with Mustard and we were kind of just figuring stuff out. And we didn't even have a plan so much of like, oh, let's make EPs. We were just recording. At that point, like signing to him wasn't even in the conversation until probably about 7-8 months later, like into 2016. And he was like, I want to sign you, blah, blah. And it worked so well. We genuinely got along and the music made sense. So that's when I signed to him.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Boot Up is, of course, featured on your EP, Ready.
Yes.
And the set has a bit of like kind of like a retro vibe, but it's still very contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
When you were going into sort of making the set of songs that are on the EP, were you thinking that consciously of that you kind of wanted
throwback, like a throwback-ish?
Because I mean, some of the beats kind of have like a throwback vibe, but it's still very modern at the same time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't. We definitely didn't do it. But I think it was definitely a subconscious thing. I think just from us. In those weeks that I was back and forth to LA, that's when I made my three EPs. So we never had like, okay, this is time, this is change, and this is ready.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were just making songs. And then at the end of it, we put it all together. So we never sat down and was like, right, this needs to feel nostalgic or anything like that. It just was what happened when we made music together. And I think that's why I was so happy to sign to him, because I'm a very big fan of like 90s and 2000s, early 2000s R&B. And I think that's where that comes in on my end, because I grew up listening to that. So my influences were very heavily 90s R&B and 2000s R&B. And then obviously Mustard. And then I'm obviously of this generation. So I have the contemporary in me naturally, I feel like, because of what we hear now. And Mustard being the same, because he's not that much older than me. So
yeah, I don't think he's not ancient.
Yeah, no. Although he's been, like, a lot of people don't realize how young he is because he's been in the industry
for
a while.
Yeah, because he had so many hits.
Yeah. But it definitely wasn't a conscious decision. It just kind of happened. And I think that's why I love to make music, because I never really like to put a label on it. Like, right, this is going to be R&B. This is going to be contemporary. We just do. And it luckily comes out and people like it.
yeah, totally.
And one of the things that kind of makes it feel really cohesive is the way you talk through all these tracks. You know, these spoken word interludes, how did that kind of come about? Was it to have like a through line through the songs, or was it the songs feel conversational to you? Like, how did that come about?
It was a bit of both, actually. I love to tell a story. So, like, I can sit here and talk for ages and tell you a story.
The people in this room that are minding you would be like, we have to go somewhere.
I definitely like to tell a story. So I wanted to have something that, although I feel like the songs are pretty straightforward story-wise, like, you can get what I'm saying, I wanted to kind of have the in-betweens to have each song go into each other, like flow a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But also I wanted, like you said, when you were listening to it, you didn't realize until you heard me speak that I was English. Yeah. I wanted to make sure that people also knew where I was from, since you can't hear it when I sing. So it was a bit of both, like making sure everything flows, telling the story a little bit better, and obviously hearing my accent. So
yeah, it kind of introduces you personally to the listener.
You mentioned a little earlier how you're kind of the sort of late 90s, early 2000s in terms of sort of your, like, what you like or your mm-hmm. early influences. Mm-hmm. Who are some of the folks that influenced you? Like, are those people, like, can we name check those people that are from the late 90s? Can I guess? Like, who
yeah,
might
guess.
They be?
Oh, I want you to guess.
Well, I think
you were Lauryn Hill.
Well, I'm assuming
she's number one.
Brandy, because you were tweeting about Brandy recently.
Yes, because it was 20 years of Never Say Never.
It's there was something that was, there was a meme going around saying, like, the number one song when you turned 14 is usually a song that kind of, like, has a lot of meaning to you. Mm-hmm. And I was looking, I was like, oh, when you turned 14, because I think you were born in 94?
Yeah.
So that would make 1998, right?
Wait, no, that would be 2000.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you're 8 years old. Yeah. Wow. Well, then I'm just wrong. Well, it would be 2008. But yeah.
2008 would be... probably Beyonce for sure.
I want to say it was JoJo's.
Oh, yeah.
As well, the era of JoJo. I'm a huge JoJo fan. As well. I think that
like
was
too little, too late.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think that was the era of JoJo. So, but yeah, it would be the Lauryn Hill was number one, but the Brandy, Aaliyah, Beyonce, of course, Destiny's Child, Alicia Keys. I'm a huge Alicia Keys fan.
Do you play piano, by the way?
Do you know what? I actually started in year seventh grade. I started to play piano because I wanted to be like Alicia Keys. So I'd braid my hair and like I was like, I'm going to learn it. But I have like very little patience and I get really frustrated easily, so I wasn't picking it up the way I wanted to, so I stopped my lessons. But I have recently decided that I'm gonna teach myself again, or at least get lessons, because I think it helps definitely when you're making music. But yeah, any and everyone to 1990s R&B or 2000s R&B, or even just like I'm a huge Christina Aguilera fan too, who's like infused in all these different genres.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So yeah,
You can actually, I noted this on our notes here, on the last track on the album, on the EP, it's called Anywhere. And when I heard
Anymore.
Oh, Anymore, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
and here's where I'm going to gush about the song, and you're like, yeah, you got the wrong title.
It's okay.
When I heard it, I actually felt like I was hearing like sort of echoes of Beyonce, the way she phrases certain songs.
And, thank you so much. That's a huge compliment.
The kind of the warmth in your voice in that particular track. I was like, this kind of has echoes of Beyonce.
Thank you so much.
I hope, I was like, sometimes people don't like the idea of like, oh, you remind me of this other person.
But oh,
like,
no.
Since she kind of influenced you, I'm like, ooh.
That's a huge, like, for somebody to say it reminded them of Beyonce, I don't think anyone would not like that.
But it was still very
right.
You. It was still a very
no,
you
thank
track.
Thank you. And speaking of Beyonce, I actually got word the other day, because you know she's on tour right now.
That she wants that to collaborate.
Oh, well, I would die, literally. But she... Before she goes in, like, I don't know if she said it once, I think, before she went into Bonnie and Clyde, and she was like, oh, who in here is booed up or something like that. And I was like, oh my, I died.
She spoke your words.
Yeah, so I was like, wait, does Beyonce know this song? Like, I was.
She clearly must.
Yeah, clearly does.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. Like, yeah.
Boy.
Crazy.
Boy.
That feels like a perfect note to end on. Like, yeah. Beyonce knows your song.
Yeah.
You have made it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in today. This was awesome, and good luck with the song and all your future music.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
You were like a drug, but I don't feel the buzz no more, baby, baby.
Thank you so much to the quite lovely LMA for stopping by.
It's always fun to talk to someone who's like at that point in their career where they're about to just completely skyrocket.
Yeah.
She was so sweet.
Very humble.
And that song is amazing.
That song is amazing. It's very good. If you haven't heard it yet, I mean, you've obviously heard it now because we played a little bit for you. But the EP is quite good. Go check out the EP. And it makes me interested to hear everything else from her and what she has in store for us.
Totally.
So, much success to you in the future, Miss LMA. And now it's time for the chart stat of the week. 40 years ago this week, Andy Gibb's Shadow Dancing hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100, marking Gibb's third consecutive number one on the chart, following Love is Thicker Than Water and I Just Want to Be Your Everything.
Love is Thicker Than Water.
Is that what I said?
Yeah, I just am like, that's not the phrase, and I've never heard that song title before, so I'm just like, that's an interesting turn of phrase.
Yeah, love is thicker than water.
I suppose it is.
Tell the audience what the actual phrase is supposed to be.
Blood is thicker than water.
Hence why, you know.
But that's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, notably, let me back up just a second. Shadow Dancing actually topped the chart dated June 17th, 1978, and spent 7 weeks atop the list. Notably, all three of those songs were either written or co-written by Andy's big brother, Barry Gibb, of course, the Bee Gees. The brotherly trio was comprised of Andy's three older brothers, Barry, Morris, and Robin. Fun fact, the Gibbs were so big in 1978 that of the 20 songs that were number one that year, 7 of them were either performed or written by one of the brothers Gibb. There were 3 number ones by the Bee Gees, 2 by Andy Gibb, because one of his 3 actually happened the previous year. You had Yvonne Elliman's If I Can't Have You, which was written by the Bee Gees, and Frankie Valli's Grease, which was written and produced by Barry Gibb. So there you have it. This week, back in 1978, Andy Gibb ruled the Hot 100 with Shadow Dancing, helping cement the brothers Gibb's dominance on the pop charts. All right. We have reached the end of our show. And I just realized that at the tail end of my script, I have someone's FedEx printout.
Oh, shoot.
I need to go give that back to someone.
Take that back to them.
That's not part of our show.
Oops, printer theft.
What song should we go out on, Katie?
Well, it feels like a very Beyonce show, you know, given our news and then LMA's Beyonce shout out. So maybe some Beyonce, maybe some old school Beyonce.
Oh, which old school Beyonce should it be?
I have a million favorites. It's not very old, but one of my absolute favorite Beyonce songs is Countdown.
Countdown.
Yes.
Let's count down to the countdown.
Yeah.
See you guys next time.
Bye.